NPR.
Here in the U.S., labor negotiations almost always work in a bottom-up fashion, right? Employees at a particular company or worksite, they get to talking and say, let's form a union. And then they try to negotiate with management, and if they're successful, boom, you got a contract.
But last week, California passed a law that essentially flips that dynamic on its head. The law is called the Fast Recovery Act because it applies specifically to most fast food restaurants. And instead of the grassroots approach, the law calls for the formation of a fast food council.
Actual name.
Sounds delicious. And this 10-member council will bring together representatives for companies and workers. And after some negotiation, they'll decide on wage and working standards for hundreds of employers and 500,000 workers, both union and not union.
This, by the way, is a first-of-its-kind law in the U.S., a top-down approach to labor relations that has some worker advocates very excited, some business owners very exasperated, and both sides muttering this wonky-sounding phrase, sectoral bargaining. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Adrian Ma.
And I'm Weilin Wong. So advocates and academics think sectoral bargaining could be the next big thing for American labor, a way to address decades of declining union power. Today on the show, we explain how and look at why California's labor market experiment could take a big step towards that goal.
This message comes from NPR sponsor MassMutual. From college planning to life insurance, MassMutual can help you plan for all the important moments in life so you can protect all the important people in your life. Talk to MassMutual today. Feel comfortable about tomorrow.
Fast food is where Aaron Dubé started his professional journey.
McDonald's in Seattle. For 2 years when I was in high school, worked the grill, the cash register, drive-through, you name it. I had a lot of burns to prove it.
Getting burned is also a hazard of podcasting. I don't know if people know that.
Too many spicy takes?
Yes. Mostly it's me getting burned a lot of the time. But, you know, not like Aaron was at McDonald's. He says working the grill, the fry machine, it was often hot and a little dangerous. And also the pay was not great. But in hindsight, it was a good experience.
It gave me an opportunity to understand some aspects of what I ended up getting really interested in studying. Why do people get paid what they do, and why is it sometimes so damn low?
Aaron would dig into those questions when he later became a labor economist, currently works at UMass Amherst. And he says part of the answers relate to the fast food business model. You might see 100 stores with the same logo out front, but those stores might have 100 different owners.
And so while workers at one Chipotle might bargain for better wages for themselves, that doesn't help workers at the Chipotle across town or the Qdoba across the street. This is why labor advocates for years have been trying to promote this thing called sectoral bargaining.
What that means is that employers from a particular sector, like, let's say, auto or steel, get together with representatives from workers and they hash out a deal. At the national level, typically, sometimes regionally. And those deals cover most jobs in those industries. Doesn't matter if someone's a member of a union or not member of a union, those jobs are covered. Now, that is not what we have in the United States. Here in America, what we have is basically you bargain at a workplace. It's at that kind of micro level.
Now, Aaron says, contrast that with the way things work in some other countries. Take France, for instance. For context, both France and the U.S. have similar, relatively low rates of union membership, around 10%.
That may be surprising to you until I tell you, in France, about 95% of its workforce is covered by collective bargaining contracts. So even if they're not members of unions, there are jobs where wages are actually set by national level sectoral collective bargaining contracts.
Whether by law or custom, sectoral bargaining or sector-wide standard setting is also common in places like Germany, Sweden, South Africa, and Argentina. Which begs the question, why isn't it so common in the U.S.?
Well, it turns out that there was a time when the sectoral approach look like it might become the norm in U.S. labor relations. Back in the 1950s, powerful unions representing auto workers, steel workers, and Teamsters, they all managed to negotiate what essentially amounted to sector-wide contracts. But Sharon Block, who teaches labor policy at Harvard Law School, she says all that happened during a time when roughly one out of three private sector jobs was a union job. And despite all the hubbub you might have been seeing in the news about workers at Starbucks's and Trader Joe's's and Amazon organizing, union membership has fallen to historic lows.
When you're losing membership, you're sort of losing market share, to use that term. You've got less power. And so that moment where sort of the union figured out how to exercise this power in a model that could really work, you then have them start losing power. And so it was not a good formula for extending that.
Sharon argues that the shrinking power of unions is one reason the government should encourage more sectoral type bargaining. Some workplaces have become much more difficult to organize because of what researchers call the fissuring of the workplace. She says, take hotels, for instance.
The people at the front desk may be subcontracted from some staffing agency. The landscapers work for a landscaping company. The housekeepers work for a housekeeping company. To organize that kind of workplace, you have to go to each of those different companies and organize a union vis-a-vis each company. If you had sectoral bargaining, you'd say, okay, everybody in the hotel sector, all of you sit at the table together.
Sharon says this broad approach to labor relations would also change the dynamic in another important way.
Sectoral bargaining takes wages and basic benefits, working conditions out of competition, because you've got this common agreement. All the employees in the sector are paid the same thing. Employers don't worry so much about losing employees to another company that like just offers them like a little bit more money.
We should note here that California's law is not full on sectoral bargaining, but it is moving in that direction. Remember, it creates a special counsel with the power to set sector-wide standards, including a minimum wage as high as $22 an hour next year. Still, the law is not sitting well with the fast food companies who are fighting it. They say it's not being applied fairly. For example, it doesn't affect companies with fewer than 100 locations.
Yeah, and an industry group called the International Franchise Association, they argue the law will raise labor and food costs, which will also mean higher prices for customers. And in fact, one fast food executive told the Wall Street Journal that because of the law, he's going to cut back on hiring by automating jobs. Aaron Dubé, the labor economist, he says whenever you make a big tweak like this to the labor market, you do run the risk of some unintended consequences.
For example, if fast food wages are raised high enough that it leads fast food employers to not hire as many workers, that could hurt the workers you're trying to help. The question is that likely to happen? But let me say, this is just not something we have a whole lot of evidence on because we don't have a whole lot of experience with doing this yet.
In this particular case, Aaron is slightly optimistic because it won't just be the government unilaterally imposing rules, but rather businesses and workers deciding them together.
Yeah, that is if they can even get in the room together. Currently, fast food companies are pushing to delay the implementation of this law and actually trying to put the question to voters in a referendum. Say, Waylon, what do you think the seating arrangement would be at one of these fast food council meetings?
Well, I think instead of sitting at a conference table, they're in the ball pit.
They would be like, we've drawn up the contracts, but then we just lost them. They're somewhere in the ball pit. This episode was produced by senior producer Viet Le, with engineering from Robert Rodriguez. Catherine Yang checked the facts, Cake and Cannon edits the show, and The Indicator's a production of NPR.